There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, welcome to My Good Bad Brain. It's a podcast about mental health and being a person and stuff like that. Today's episode's got this is a trigger warning. It's a tough episode involving some stuff about sexual abuse, and I just want to let you guys know that up front. That's it. Let's start the theme song and do the show. Okay, take care.
Welcome to My Good Bad Brain. I'm a normal person, so I'm insane. I've got depression and ADHD, but I'm doing better since I medicated me. I'm still not always sure whether I exist or what being a person even really is, but I figured out a long time ago that being alive is beautiful.
Hi, I'm not going to do too much intro to this episode. I feel like that's becoming the thing that I just say at the beginning of the other episode. Like, oh, I'm not going to do too much intro on this episode. Today's a heavy episode. I know I already mentioned that in the pre-roll section, but I want to mention it again. You know, the question that came through basically was like, what's after trauma? The question involved a lot of context and story about some personal stuff that we'll get into. That's just a horrible, hard story. And the gist of it at the end, though, the question is just when can you expect trauma to stop affecting you or stop feeling controlled by it, that kind of thing. Like, is there a life after trauma? And I mean, I'll just say the short answer is yes. If you want a spoiler alert for, you know, before you get into listening, you know, obviously Dr. Nick's amazing and gets into some specifics about how one might go about this kind of thing. There's no substitute for just doing treatment and time, you know, but I think it's important that this thing comes up a lot. This, you know, whatever mental health issue kind of we're dealing with. And I just think it's really important to know that there is a way out of whatever thing you feel under, you know? One thing Dr. Nick says, I think he says it in this episode, he says in the past as well, he says, you know, the good news is that you can change things, you know, you can fix things. The bad news is, like, you got to do the work. And it's totally fucking unfair. You know, you didn't do anything to deserve, like, whatever shitty thing might have happened to you. But you are unfortunately going to have to be the one to do the work to get out from under it, to get control of it. And that's, on one level, a bummer, you know, just, I guess. But because, you know, it's hard, and knowing that it's real and that you're going to have to do it. There's no, like, magic answer. No magic pill that you just do this one thing and then it's all fixed. But I do find it very hopeful to know that it's within your power to get better, you know, to get yourself to a place where whatever thing that troubles you isn't controlling your life and your reality and your experiences day to day, you know? I mean, sometimes you just got to really repeat that and hear that over and over again to remind yourself, because it can feel pretty fucking rough, the repetition, the cycle that we all experience who have mental health struggles, the sort of feeling that you keep having to redo it. It keeps rearing its head again, that it never feels like totally gone, whatever your personal thing is that you're dealing with. I think that's a common thing, you know, that it might go away for a while. But I think it's good to sort of be mentally prepared for the possibility that these things come back, and the acceptance that these things come back. Because I've in the past had this thing happen where I feel like I've gotten better, I've figured some stuff out, and then it comes back, and then I just have this like double feeling of like, oh, I'm such a failure. This is so much worse because, you know, I thought I got, but I now it's back. Like, I thought I beat it, but I was so bad at beating it. Now it's back, and I guess I'll never get out from under. You know what I mean? I can make it worse for myself. But I think just accepting the nature of these things, the nature of being a person, is one of sort of repeating lessons over and over. And a thing that Dr. Nick always says, it's practice. You know, you have to practice these skills. It takes skills to overcome your thought patterns and sort of traumas and things that you got in your body. So anyway, this is a heavy ep, and it's full of really wonderful information. I think a lot of hope, ultimately, for anybody out there struggling with some heavy mental illness stuff, and particularly traumas that you feel, for whatever reason, just don't want to unstick themselves from your day-to-day experiences. I just want to say that, you know, you can definitely change that, and that can definitely be a new reality. It might not be easy, might not be overnight, but it's possible. All right, I'm going to stop talking and let this convo go as we get into this question of what happens after trauma. Thanks a lot, you guys. Self-care, you know, hydrate, be well. I'll see you guys soon. Jer, I sent this... someone wrote another question that's pretty intense. And I think that's all we'll really talk about today. So I'll just say up front that there's like a, you know, content warning for this. There's like a lot of trauma and there's sexual abuse stuff in this person's story. Really grateful that they felt like sharing this openly on the show. 'Cause I don't know, I think these are scary questions to ask about. And, a lot of people, I think, even if you don't relate specifically to this, maybe you'll have some similar experiences with their question related to trauma. And Dr. Nick is like, trauma's your central area of expertise. So this is a perfect thing. So I'm just going to read this again. Like I said, there's some sexual abuse in this story. Content warning. So just, you know, be forewarned. Okay. My question this week is about trauma. And it isn't as much a question as a plea for advice from Dr. Nick. I've discussed my relationship with my father with a few therapists, but I'm currently without one. Bad timing. Without ranting or taking up too much time, I'll try to explain the situation. I was sexually assaulted by my father at the age of 11, about a year after my mom left my dad, after he slept with her 17-year-old niece, who was living with us through her battle with severe bipolar disorder. When I came forward, my mom filed for a restraining order, but nothing else. And since that day, we have barely spoken about it. And every single other person in my family has claimed that I'm lying. Most claim that my mama coerced me into faking the abuse as revenge. Since that day, my immediate family does not speak to any extended family, but no one will say out loud why. I've been left to battle the trauma alone, sometimes in my deepest depressions, questioning if it even happened. June 15th, my father died super suddenly. As mature and as smart as I know I am, I, for some reason, believed that the pain and trauma would die with him. And the realization that it had not was really hard for me to swallow. And I found myself having a full childish temper tantrum type of meltdown in the middle of the night. He made me feel so weak, so silent, and so scared. And if I still feel like that, even when he's dead, what is to stop that from continuing the rest of my life? It even got worse. Right before last weekend, Father's Day, I found out that I was listed in his obituary as his loving child, even though I asked the social worker when she contacted me to make sure that doesn't happen. His sister put me in there. 15 years later, and everyone gets to live a delusion while I am tiny and quiet and weak. I don't want everything to feel so triggering all the time. So my question, even though I know it won't be this easy, But what exists at the end of trauma? What has to happen for one person, a person who isn't even alive anymore, to stop choking me? I hope this makes sense. Thank you for your time. I appreciate you both and this podcast. I hope that others can benefit from this conversation. Thanks for sharing that. That's a really tough story. I'm going to
share. Yeah, it's fucking horrible. I mean, you know, really appreciate this person asking about this. It's a horrible story. And, you know, childhood sexual abuse is one of the most horrible things that anyone can go through, you know. And as so often happens, it seems that this is compounded by this sort of conspiracy of silence perpetrated by the family so that they don't have to feel uncomfortable, which is also fucking horrible, you know. And yeah, that unfortunately happens a lot. Sounds like maybe the person's mother is a little bit more validating, but their extended family is, again, in denial to preserve their own false memory of, you know, her father. So I think there's a lot of layers here, you know, there's a lot of layers, and I just want to also make it clear that these types of systemic, deep-seated developmental traumas are not solvable, you know, through advice or a turn of phrase. I know this person knows that, and I'm sure other people know that too, but I think what we can do here is try to maybe give a little context and a little bit of direction, but mostly just instill hope. I think that we can definitely do is instill hope. But that's not going to be a substitute for a long journey of processing, skill building, and recovery. I mean, and I think that's what needs to be done. You know, my experience, that's how people kind of cover and build a life that's worth living after going through childhood sexual trauma and the compound trauma of having their family pretend it didn't happen, which again is like really unfortunately common. So I think to start, you know, first with the individual and then kind of move out, I would say is I don't know this person's kind of history and treatment, but it's really critical, and you deserve this, to have a good therapist. And I know that from the question you mentioned, you discussed a few times this experience with therapists, but I think you really need a and this may have already happened, so if I'm already telling you things you've done, I'm sorry. I know that's fucking annoying. I think if you haven't had a real evaluation assessment to determine whether, you know, you're suffering from symptoms of PTSD, depression, anxiety, other trauma-related illnesses, I think you need that. You need that, you know, from someone who specializes in good psychological assessment. My guess is that you will have some trauma symptoms. I mean, it's hard to imagine not having them. So in that case, I think you really need a trauma specialist, and that not someone who's just going to kind of talk to you about what happened, but someone who's trained in evidence-based interventions for PTSD and trauma-related illness. And I think, you know, my advice is always to start with the treatment that has the highest level of evidence and then work your way down. I would start there. You know, I know it's very difficult to do that right now. I think, you know, when I said that when we talked offline, maybe I can touch base with this person and see if I can help them find some resources. But yeah, I mean, those things need to happen. You got to have like a really good evaluation to figure out, you know, what are the symptoms that are most prominent, and you need to meet with a really well-trained trauma therapist to help you work through the symptoms, the immediate symptoms, if those are going on, like if there are immediate PTSD symptoms like nightmares, experiencing avoidance, psychological, behavioral avoidance, your kind of immediate problems related to processing trauma memories, because, you know, we have very good treatment for that. That's kind of one thing, immediate sort of individual level of trauma-related evaluation and treatment piece. Then you have the other side, which is like how to manage this in the context of your family. And that's related, but a little different. And, you know, there's no one-size-fits-all answer. But what I would say is, And you may not be at a place where you want to think about this stuff because it may kind of like revive the trauma memories. And if you haven't kind of built containment structure around those trauma memories and process them in such a way that they're stored in the brain as memories and not like immediate experiences, and you haven't acquired the physiological relaxation skills you need in order to access those newly stored memories in a way that's not really scary, then maybe you can't think about this family side yet. You know, so that's why I advocate evaluation and treatment for individual level symptoms first. Okay. But
do you mind,
let's say that.
Can I pause you for a sec? Because I'm curious about that.
Sure, yeah.
What do you mean when you're saying like recently stored memories? Because they're
the theory behind PTSD is that, and this is, you know, supported by the evidence, is that when you have you have this kind of substructure in the brain called the HPA axis and the limbic system. And that's active, and without going too far into the neuroscience, the part of your brain that stores memory, the hippocampus, is right next to the part of your brain that's responsible for like scary feelings, the amygdala. The reason that's the case is because the amygdala activates when you are experiencing fear, danger, horror, because you need to kind of override your physiological system and get the fuck out of there. Okay. So it's responsible for activating your sort of fight or flight network when you're in immediate danger. Problem is, when you have a trauma memory, the memory is stored in such a way that recalling the memory activates that response in the amygdala that it feels as if the memory is happening right now. It feels as if it's a present moment fear response, because it is. Instead of a recalled memory of something that was scary that doesn't provoke the same activation in the amygdala and the limbic system. That's a kind of a gross way of describing it, but it's accurate. So what trauma treatment does is it allows you to store those memories in such a way that they get hit with the date and time tag. So your body knows and this is not something I'm experiencing right now. It's unpleasant and terrible and horrible and disgusting, but I'm not in immediate danger right now. These are memories from the past. Right? But if you don't do that, when you recall the memory, your body reacts as if that's happening right now. Mm-hmm. So the danger response you feel in the body is the response of present moment danger. Does that make sense?
Yes. I didn't. Maybe I vaguely knew that, but I didn't really know that. That's very interesting to understand. Yeah.
So that's why people who have managed PTSD react to situations as if they are in imminent threat or imminent danger, because that's what their body is telling them to do. Those memories are not stored in a way that your other memories are, where they're kind of filed with a date and time tag that doesn't provoke the same physiological response.
Got it. Okay.
That's why it's really hard until you get that treatment to like deal with it, because you're immediately put back into fight or flight mode by remembering this trauma experience.
Because I do want to hear, I didn't mean to cut you off at all. I want to hear what you're going to say about the family dynamic thing very much. But before you do, if I'm looking for a trauma specialist, like what do I look for? How do I go seek out that kind of care?
You're gonna have to Google around a little bit. I don't have the URL like in my mind, but, Edna Foa, who, developed prolonged exposure, runs the anxiety center at Penn. So if you kind of just Google those things, Edna Foa, Penn, you know, Anxiety and Trauma Center, there's a list of all the therapists across the country who are certified by her organization in prolonged exposure. You can find people in your area who are trained in prolonged exposure, and there are other trauma treatments like cognitive processing therapy, MDR also has some evidence, although I think the training is not as like rigorously overseen by a central accrediting body for MDR. That's just my view. Look around and see what seems best to you. But you can find a prolonged exposure therapist. And so that's what I would do. I mean, I was on the list for a while when I was practicing. You can find someone.
Prolonged exposure, this is interesting. Edna Foa, I've never heard of her. She also does, because it's for anxiety as well, I guess, her special, or well, what she does.
Oh, so prolonged exposure is not for anxiety, but Edna Fowler is an anxiety specialist and trauma specialist.
Got it.
Trauma used to be under anxiety disorders in the DSM. So that's why, you know, they, Institute's been around for a long time. So that's why it's called that. Now trauma and stress related disorders are their own thing, DSM, but they're not, I don't think they're going to go back and change the name of the Institute, you know, or the center. Mind,
I always think whenever I hear prolonged therapy or prolonged exposure, it sounds really intense and scary to me, like prolonged exposure.
It is intense. Yeah, it is intense. So basically all trauma therapies are exposure therapies. What exposure is bringing the memory back up into consciousness in a controlled environment that's safe so that you can learn to habituate the feelings of fear, anxiety, shame that are triggered by that memory. And then you learn to reprocess those emotional experiences in a safe way. And by doing that, you re-encode. Because every time you recall a memory, you restore it, right? Every time you bring a memory to consciousness, it gets restored again, right? Which is why memory is not super reliable.
Wow.
But whenever that memory comes up, you are experiencing those feelings, which you're scared will overwhelm you and destroy you. So you have the experience that, oh, actually, this memory does not destroy me. These feelings do not destroy me. I can cope with these feelings. And then you re-encode that memory. And by doing that, the analogy is watching a horror movie. If every time the scariest horror movie you've ever seen gets to the scariest part, you cover your eyes and look away, it stays scary every time you see it. And imagine if someone just shoved it in front of your face at all these unpredictable moments. It would be fucking horrible. But when you re-encode the memory, it's like force yourself to watch that scene over and over and over and over again. Mm. It's very unpleasant, but the thousandth time you see it, it's still unpleasant and you still don't like it, but it doesn't ruin your experience of yourself, doesn't destroy the experience you're having, doesn't terrify you, because you've seen it a million times and you know that you can deal with it, even though it sucks.
Wow. Yeah, that's good. That's really interesting.
And prolonged exposure. It's more complicated than that, but that's the core to understand the process of habituation. And what that does is that re-encodes trauma memory. So like the biological piece of memory encoding that's responsible for, you know, trauma symptoms gets dealt with that way. But it doesn't deal with all of the kind of the next circle out, which is like of your other relationships with people, you know, how to restructure your relationships and build your life in a way that, you know, helps to support your goals and values. It doesn't do that.
Right.
You need more therapy for that.
Before we get into the family thing, I was going to ask, my mom did some therapy a while ago. I never asked her specifically about it, like what put her into it or what she was trying to treat. I know she's got some, you know, tough stuff in her past. She did a MDMA facilitated thing where at like a university, some kind of research thing where they, you know, administer MDMA and then run through a thing. And it sounds kind of similar to what you're talking about and how she described it. Cause she was like, I mean, one thing she said was like, my mom's very sort of woo woo spiritual as well, but later she was like, you know, it's one thing to have the, conceptual notion of like being held in the love of God, and then she's like, it's another thing to like feel it, to like be in there. And that kind of sounds similar to what you're describing, I guess, of like being and from what I've read about some other psychedelic treatments as well, where they give you this stuff, or I think ketamine might be a similar thing too when they do the ketamine for depression, but that might be a different thing, where they do this and then they bring up these memories and discuss it, and you can kind of talk about it in these while under the influence of these psychedelics or the MDMA. And so it like, you can recode the memory.
So ketamine treatment for depression is going to be different functionally than PTSD treatment. I mean, very often trauma and depression are comorbid, but usually the depression is secondary to the trauma because the trauma, unprocessed trauma, interferes with your ability to live your life, which can then lead to depression symptoms. Here's what I'd say. The emerging evidence for like psilocybin or the MDMA, the methyldioxymethamphetamine treatment, like that, those, the emerging evidence is very encouraging. At the same time, there isn't the same body of literature and support. And there are just fewer people trained in that because it's literally being studied as we speak. So, you know, as a responsible, like practitioner, I have to advocate that you first start with the treatment that has the highest standard of evidence and the lowest risk associated, which would be like the talk therapies, often accompanied by medication, like antidepressant medication. But these other therapies are emerging, and, you know, in 10 years, those might be the frontline therapies, you know? So that's, you kind of be, have to be an informed consumer a little bit, but,
Also with those medication, those therapies involving those compounds also involves therapy, right? Like there's surely some exercises involved. It's not just like, you can't just take drugs at home and be like, I'm fixed.
No. It's overseen. It's in an office context with two psychotherapists in the room during the trip. And I think it's experimental. It's an experimental treatment. They're experimenting with doses, frequency, you know. I would just always advocate that you start with a well-studied treatment rather than an experimental treatment, even though this sounds like cool.
You know? It really does sound cool. And, I'm like really having difficulty. I want to keep asking questions. I want to be like, just while we're on the subject, I was like, how do you, if you want to get involved with research, like how do you apply for that stuff? But I think that's worth actually asking for real. I don't want to go too far.
I would stay away from any like people who are not doing a federally funded study. Okay. Because I don't know what those people are doing. So, or who aren't attached to a university. I mean, there are lots of people I'm sure out there who on their website say that they do MDMA assisted therapy, but like, who the fuck are they?
Right. So how do you find what expertise? How would you find those federally funded? How would you vet that?
Yeah. So you're going to have to do some research. I mean, I know off the top of my head that UCLA has funded psilocybin studies. I'm blanking on the guy's name right now, but he's attached to Harbor UCLA. I know him because I work there. So that's Harbor UCLA, you know, but you're going to have to do some research. I mean, it's not going to be easy. Like it's not an easy process to like join the experimental arm of a psilocybin research trial. You know, it's much easier to find a evidence-based trauma therapist. So that's why I advocate doing that.
Does Grobe sound right? Charles Grobe?
Like a direct pipeline to getting into the experimental arm of a psilocybin trial.
Probably, especially if you haven't tried, it's probably still better to just try established methods first.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Do you mind, is Charles Grobe, does that sound right?
It's Grobe. Yeah, it's Dr. Grobe. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Will you please, sorry, I cut off and went down this first half of the trauma treatment path first. Talk more about this family dynamic thing, because I think probably a lot of people can relate to that as well. Like, your situation might not feel, it might not be as dramatic as this story, which is, again, thanks for sharing. It's a really, really hard story just to even read. You know, that family thing of like they want to deny things that happened, or what do you do with all that?
Yeah. So again, I don't want to oversimplify. This is not a problem that can be solved in 20 minutes. You know? I really want to advocate that this person work with a therapist that they can build a trusting, supportive and validating relationship with. That's the most important thing, because you're going to need help figuring out the nuances of how to manage this in the family system that you describe. And I am not going to do a good job of without knowing you intimately. I mean, that, let's just be very clear about that.
Will you say that again? Your audio caught out for a second. You're not going to do a good job. Okay. And then of whatever you said.
It's just not possible to do a good job giving you advice about how to manage the complexities of family interaction with the history that you describe. You need to work with a trained therapist with whom you have a validating, trusting, intimate relationship in order to figure out how to navigate that system. And it's going to take time and trial and error. So I'm not going to be able to do that. I can just talk about a couple of principles. Okay. Does that make sense as a preamble?
Yes.
Okay. First, what I'll just say is you deserve unequivocally to be in a loving, validating system that supports you and that believes you and that validates your experience. 100% deserve that. You should have that, and you shouldn't settle for anything less than that. And until you have that, it's going to be hard for you to be happy, period. So, you know, when you have an extended family that doesn't believe you, that thinks you're lying or being manipulated by your mother and invalidates your trauma, the most horrible, deep trauma that one can imagine, that's totally unacceptable. And so if those people are not willing to change, it's very difficult for me to see how you can maintain a relationship with those people. Mm-hmm. That's really hard. That's really hard, you know? And I don't mean to sound as if that's just some trite, easy thing you can do, sever a relationship with your extended family. I know it's not that, which is why you got to have somebody in your corner who you trust intimately, who truly sees you and validates your experience. Okay. But I'm just telling you, I cannot conceive of a way that you can have a close relationship with people who don't believe that you were victimized and abused and who want to instead maintain the fantasy through conspiracy of silence of your father as a good person. If they're so attached to that idea that they can't validate your truth, I don't see how you can have them in your life. Figuring that out for yourself, what that means and how to do that, you're going to need a lot of help with that because it's really, really fucking hard to do, you know? That's extended family. I think when it comes to mom, it sounds like, you know, you've had a little bit of a conversation with mom about this and she's really uncomfortable with this. Also, I mean, here's the thing. People may not be emotionally strong enough and have the skills that they need to grapple with this truth. Mm-hmm. They may not be. They may not be able to do that. They may be too limited in their own emotional development and skills to be able to do that. And if that's the case, you're not going to be able to give them those skills against their will. You know, they're going to have to do that work. They have work to do. If they don't want to do their work, hard to imagine how you can be in a group project together.
Yeah.
You know? I think that's why you also need to be in this trusting, validating, intimate relationship with a therapist to help figure out how you're going to frame this conversation with your mom, because it's about what you need. It's about what you need to move forward in your life to heal and build a life worth living. And it's about whether those people are willing to do that, be in your life. I mean, that's the calculus. Are they going to do the work they need to do to deserve re-entry into your life, to your circle and system? And that's the calculus. Your mom needs to do that. Anyone who wants to be part of your life needs to do that work. They have work to do. You don't have that work to do for them. You have your own work. That's their work. And it's up to them whether they're going to be able to do that work. The problem is that if they decide that they're not going to do it, which be the case, yeah, it's more work for you, because you're going to have to figure out how do you cope with that.
Right.
You cope with that knowledge, that realization, that loss. It's going to be a loss, even though the fuck is wrong with them. It's still an experienced as a loss.
Yeah.
You. It's going to require more work from you. All this is completely fucking unfair. I mean, it's totally, utterly unfair and unjustified that you have all this fucking work to do. But you do. And don't give yourself more. You know, they have their own. They have their own work to do. The thing is, so that's a little bit on the family side, okay?
Yeah, that's...
Let me just...
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I would just also say, so then like the third piece is, you know, how do you kind of get out from under, you know, this abuse now that's been perpetrated by someone who's dead? Let me just say that you absolutely can recover from this, have a life worth living, and build intimate relationships. The intimate relationships, you absolutely 100% can do this. And I'm just thinking of people that I worked with who experienced, you know, unimaginable childhood sexual trauma. And through therapy, through, in this case, prolonged exposure, and then therapy subsequently, have really healthy, good, meaningful relationships. Doesn't mean that they're not affected by their trauma still. They are. It's a memory that they'll never, it's an experience that shaped their life that they'll never forget. But they have a good life. They have a good life. They have a partner. They were able to think of one person in particular, but this is, you know, many people, they're able to have a good life. And there's also, there's this concept called post-traumatic growth that's being explored a lot now in the research literature. And, you know, there are ways to actually grow. It's not a silver lining, like, fuck that, you know, that's not what this is. But by processing trauma, by exploring, reprocessing deep, deep pain, people become stronger. They actually can become stronger, more empathic, more clarity in terms of their kind of like existential experience, what's meaningful for them in their life, what values are important for them. That's possible, you know, so that's this phenomenon of post-traumatic growth. But you have to first kind of do all this work. It's a lot of fucking work, you know, it's like a long journey of work ahead of you.
Yeah.
But that journey can end in more strength, more empathy, more clarity around goals, more meaning in life, better relationships, more intimacy. All of that is within your grasp. And I don't see any reason on earth why you would be unable to achieve that. You will be able to achieve that. It's just going to happen gradually along a difficult road, you know, along a difficult path. It's achievable. It's attainable. You absolutely can attain that. You just got to find someone who can help you, who's really good and can help you and who you connect with.
That's really, thank you. Yeah, I want to just end there. I think that's good for today. If this person already knows, and I'll make sure they know again, Dr. Nick, that was nice enough to offer to talk to them privately and help direct them towards some of that stuff. And you know, if you have some of those resources, like Edna FOA was the name that you said, to Google Edna FOA and prolonged exposure therapy and find somebody certified in that in your area. Maybe you also said what was the other one?
Well, the therapy, yeah. So Edna FOA is the kind of inventor of prolonged exposure. But then there's cognitive processing therapy, right. CPT, which is another like gold standard treatment. EMDR is also has some evidence behind it. So these are all, you know, you would see who's in your area. Like, yeah, you got to do all that nitty gritty bullshit. Like, who's in your network, or can you pay out of pocket, or you know, all that, yeah, all that stuff. Would start there though, in terms of finding a trauma therapist.
I know this is the age old question.
Honestly, like, I would say it's not a substitute for doing individual trauma work, but it may be not a bad idea to find a group in the meantime.
Got it.
If you want to do that.
Where, because I was going to ask about that. I know this is the question that comes up all the time, is just cost prohibitiveness. Is if you, you know, maybe don't have much extra money to be seeking treatment, or maybe you don't have health insurance or something, what resources do you advise people to look for who need this kind of help? And then, like you said about the group thing, what groups do you look for? Where do you look for a safe group?
Unfortunately, this stuff is totally location dependent. So it really just depends on where you are, and it depends on how much money you have. You know, so if, for example, if you have like an Obamacare health plan, they all cover some amount of mental health treatment, you know?
Yeah.
So that, thank God, that's like part of a basic insurance plan now. You know, if there are probably also county systems, like public mental health care system. Again, it just really depends on where you are. One I know is like the LA County mental health system. So in LA County, there's a very good public mental health system, depending on where you kind of like service area of LA County you are in. Depends.
Just in case, if there's, you know, just because we have you and you specifically know about LA, do you have any recommendation where to go look in LA?
Well, you got to go to the LA County Department of Mental Health website, which is, you know, it's fucking like AOL Web 1.0. It's going to be a bitch to figure out. It sucks. You know, it's like a bunch of labor you have to do to like get care. Once you figure out the like address of your service,
really quick, if you have like a trusted, I don't know, just in my experience, I feel like it's kind of helpful to enlist people who love you and who you love, like who you trust, to like just for that process of finding help, because it's a fucking nightmare.
Get something out, get down in front of the laptop and plan for like a day at least, of going through all this stuff and mm-hmm. trying to figure out where you're going to go.
I mean, I know it's going to depend on your. I mean, we talked about it, but I ended up going to some therapy because of a recommendation from a friend, because I reached out to my friend group and was like, I'm in a really bad place. And it led to them talking to me and it led to them suggesting a place. And then I had to take it from there. But I really do think it's helpful if you have trusted people in your life just to keep you not even like accountable, just to be your teammate, your partner and helping you figure it, like do that tedious. It's so fucking lame. It's so crazy how hard it is to like get treatment sometimes in the system.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, in LA County, what will happen basically, it depends on the service area and the clinic. But what will happen is most of those clinics have like a day where you just line up to go get an intake appointment. So you get there at like 7:30 in the morning, get in line, and you get a date for an intake appointment that's probably a month down the road. You know, now with the COVID situation, I don't know what's happening, you know, but yeah, there's just no shortcut, you know, unfortunately, unless you can pay a lot and then you can call some of these clinics like, you know, CBT California has some specialist therapists that are very good, but it's expensive, you know, pay out of pocket.
I know we're going to wrap up here quick, but I want to ask two final questions just for like actionable, hopefully, advice. One was reiterate. Yeah. So the question about the groups again, like if I was looking, I just want to make sure I get that before we go. If you're trying to find a group,
yeah,
what do you look for to know if it's like a good, I mean, you know, if I was, I've done 12 step stuff like Al-Anon AA and things like that, but this seems like this is potentially very sensitive, very difficult. That's my first question. What do you do to vet or look for a reliable, healthy, safe group to do this kind of group therapy? And then the other question I had was, are there any books or like actionable things that you can do on your own, maybe in that lag time between getting into a therapy? Like if you can't, you know, if there is a month before your appointment or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the more knowledge, the better. So, you know, The Body Keeps the Score is a good one to read, or like there's one called like Why Don't Zebras Get Ulcers or something like that. That also is good about like how trauma works in the body. And then I would do a lot of physical relaxation training, like deep breathing, progressive muscle relaxation, vigorous exercise, mindfulness meditation, things that teach you how to relax your body. Because that is part of trauma treatment. And if you come in with those skills, it's just going to help you. So again, progressive muscle relaxation, deep breathing, mindfulness meditation, vigorous exercise, things that help the body to relax. Okay. In terms of group, again, it's just going to be very regionally dependent, but you know, you got to kind of do, unfortunately, like go online and start Googling trauma groups. The indicator should be whether you feel good there. You trust your intuition. If you go in and it feels like, you know, whether it's kind of a peer-led group or a therapist-led group, if you go in and you feel like good vibes, like, oh, these people seem to like, be kind and validating and care and knowledgeable, and you feel connected and good, then that might be something to pursue. If you get a bad vibe and you're like, oh shit, this person, I just don't like their vibe, I don't feel like good here, get the fuck out of there. Don't put yourself through that. You know, when it comes to a therapist, having them be trained, especially when you want to work on trauma, is really critical because the modalities are important. But more important than that is someone who you feel trust, you know, who you feel you can trust and who you like. In like big meta analyses, relationship with the therapist is the largest driver of the outcome. So really important. It's the same for groups.
Yeah, that's good. Is there like a resource for looking for groups, like Googling? What would you just look for, trauma support group or something?
What I would do is like if it's outside the context of a clinic, because through a clinic is the same process as finding the individual therapist. I don't have off the top of my head one. What I would do personally for me is I would Google like the keywords and then my zip code.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks, Dr. Nick. I really appreciate that. And thank you to the individual who sent that message in. I really, really appreciate you being so open about that. I know like it's just, I don't know, helpful. It's always is. It always is when we share our stories with other people. I think it's really wonderful. And you already know, but you know, reach out if you want. I'll connect you with Dr. Nick, and you guys should chat a little bit. Thanks for doing that, Dr. Nick.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, y'all. That's it. We're gonna end there. Thank you so much for being here. You know, self care, hydrate, be nice to yourself, be well. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks a lot, Dr. Nick. And yeah, take it easy, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye. Good Bad Brain is, production of Mind Jam Media. And, if you enjoy the pod, you could support us at mygoodbadbrain.com. You can buy shirts and stuff, or at patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain. That's pretty much it. You can also leave reviews. Those are really helpful and nice as well. Okay. Thank you. Self-care. Hydrate. Be well. See you guys soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.